What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucks podcast. I am James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at thepewterplank.com and make sure you follow along on Twitter at Locked On Bucks, at thepewterplank, at jyarko underscore bucks, and at dh82 underscore bucks. We are continuing our Locked On Bucks progressive mock draft series, and we have come to the Indianapolis Colts. The final pick before the Buccaneers are on the clock, and there are some very interesting options still available. Bradley Chubb is still on the board. Quentin Nelson still on the board. Saquon Barkley still on the board. And to help us figure out what direction now the Bucs can go in and which of those big three is going to be gone, we would like to welcome Jake Arthur from Stampede Blue back to the podcast. He had helped out with some fantasy football stuff we did last year, and hopefully Jake will get you back on for that again this year. But first and foremost, how you doing?
Absolutely. I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, it is our pleasure. We always enjoy talking to you, and I'm sure we'll do our fantasy football series on this podcast, and we'll have you back on for that. But yeah, it's great to have you on to talk some Indianapolis Colts football. And the Colts are, they're, for lack of a better term, they're kind of disappointing. They were a real sexy pick just a few years ago to make it to the Super Bowl. Andrew Luck was rising, and now all of a sudden there's still questions surrounding Andrew Luck. Josh McDaniels is supposed to come in and coach, and turns out he's one of the worst human beings on earth. So kind of recap the Colts offseason for us, if you could. What were some of the key additions? What were some of the key losses? Kind of dive into what's been happening in the world of the Colts.
Yeah. So basically last offseason and this offseason has been all about new general manager Chris Ballard cleaning up the mess that Ryan Grigson left. He just built a roster in the worst way possible. He lucked into having a generational quarterback in Andrew Luck, who was able to carry the Colts to places they really had no business getting as far as. And so that kind of led the franchise to think they were farther along than they really were. They built the roster with aging, high-priced veterans, and now they're paying the price for it. They're having to completely start from scratch for the most part. So last year, Chris Ballard got rid of a lot of those old bloated contracts. There really was nothing to clean up this year as far as getting those old contracts out of the way. Everything was set up beautifully contractually with the guys they brought in last year. Really no dead money if they were to cut anyone, things like that. So they set those up really well. One of the big things that happened with the Colts so far this offseason is letting go of Jonathan Hankins, who was really their prize free agent last year. But the Colts are moving from the 3-4 that they were in last year over to more of a Tampa 2-4-3. And while someone like Hankins is good enough to really fit into any defense, the Colts are going to be putting an enormous premium on speed and athleticism. And while Hankins is a premium run stopper, he just doesn't fit the bill of someone who's going to be able to really do a whole lot outside of stop the run in the new defense. So with that, they've been looking at kind of smaller guys on defense. And although they had over $70 million in cap space, kind of everyone assumed that they were going to be, blowing a ton of money. It's just not in Ballard's DNA to do that, honestly. He's got this big chunk of change, but he's just not going to be forced to spend it on anyone he doesn't think is worth it. So really the biggest name they've brought in this offseason is Eric Ebron. He's going to be running mate with Jack Doyle. So that'll give Andrew Luck or Jacoby Brissett, whoever's playing quarterback, that'll give them an added weapon. They brought back Jack Muhort at guard, as well as signed Matt Slauson also at guard. Now, while that's almost certainly not going to be their plan entering the season because they need more quality depth and competition at the top, they'll probably add a couple more guys in the draft or undrafted free agency. After that, there hasn't been many new names of note. They brought in Ryan Grant, who's probably either going to be their second or third receiver. I think he's in better shape than the Baltimore move would lead you to believe. They brought in Danico Autry and Najee Good on defense, a couple guys in the front seven that should help give some quality depth, if nothing else. I think they'll still look for guys who can start over them. But other than that, it's really just been about kind of reinvesting in some of their other guys. Like I already said, they re-signed Jack Muhort. Eric Swope's coming back. He was out all last year, so kind of everyone's forgot about him a bit. But he's a tight end like Ebron who can kind of stretch the field and make things interesting for defenses. They brought back Pierre Desir, who may start at corner for them. And then they've kind of reinvested in their special teams also. Vinatieri was re-signed, and they re-signed their long snapper and already had their punter under contract. So really haven't lost anyone all too important outside of maybe Rashawn Melvin. Dante Moncrief was always kind of underwhelming. Frank Gore is gone, but that's going to change things on offense quite a bit because Marlon Mack we're assuming he's going to get unleashed unless they draft someone who's going to be more of a top running back, someone who's a bell cow who you'll want to have on the field at all times. Relatively quiet offseason, but plenty to talk about as far as, you know, additions and subtractions that they've made.
Yeah, Joe, I'll tell you, last year the Colts got three guys that I really liked for the Buccaneers. And one of them, you know, we pretty much knew from the jump that he wasn't going to Tampa, and that was Malik Hooker. But the other two, you know, there was at least a sniff of a chance that it could happen. That was Marlon Mack and Hankins. And like you said, Hankins is now moving on, you know, which does look like a smart move for the Colts. I was a little bit surprised by it myself. But really, I mean, I think Indy, I know a lot of Colts fans were frustrated early in the process and kind of similar to Bucs fans because of the lack of like the really big splash signing despite the large salary cap space. But I mean, I think Indy had a sneaky good, you know, to solid offseason up to this point. And if some of these guys that they brought in or even brought back can turn into really solid role players, it really kind of sets the foundation that, like you said previously, with their previous GM, they didn't have. And so I think, you know, kind of jumping into the deep end by just throwing a whole bunch of money at big name guys was absolutely the wrong way to go about it for the Colts. So really, I mean, I think, like I said, you know, kind of like a low key winner in the offseason so far. But one of the places where a lot of people kind of look at the Colts kind of taking an L was in the whole Josh McDaniels situation. James hit on it already, and now you've got Frank Reich. In my opinion, and I think James would echo the same thing, I think the Colts came out on top here. I think the Colts got a better head coach at the end of the day throughout this all this drama. But how did you guys feel about it over your website and yourself personally when the whole thing went down at first? And how do you feel about it now with it kind of in the rearview mirror?
Yes, I mean, that situation, no joke, that was embarrassing. That was just the worst. You know, when it looked like it was no doubt going to be McDaniels, and it looked that way for at least the week leading up to when it was announced that he was going to be hired, we pretty much all got on board with it. You know, I would say in the Colts fan base, it was probably at least 70-30 in favor. You know, everyone was like, you know, maybe he's finally learned since his days in Denver. You know, that was almost a decade ago. He's, you know, he's worked for the best coach in NFL history for all this time. He is an innovative offensive mind. You know, if he's changed his ways, then this is going to be a great pickup for the Colts. You know, we were all on board with it, especially when you think about pairing Andrew Luck with him and Marlon Mack and T.Y. Hilton. It just looked awesome. And then, you know, everything just kind of came crashing down to earth. And the Colts and their fan base already hate the Patriots so, so much. And so that happening just completely ignited another fire. And like Chris Ballard said, when he had to, you know, put on that press conference talking about it, at the very end, he said the rivalry is back on. Yeah. You know, so that was really awesome. It kind of got Colts fans running through a brick wall. But moving on to Frank Reich now, it's easy to have, you know, a defense mechanism to say that, you know, yeah, we actually did wind up coming out on top, but we truly do feel that way. Most of us are, you know, kind of 100% on board with Chris Ballard's vision, and that's that he doesn't want anyone in that building that doesn't want to be there and that isn't bought in 100%. And Frank Reich got his start coaching here in Indianapolis. You know, he was with Bill Polian back in Buffalo all that time ago. You know, he coached Peyton Manning. He's got a lot of roots here already. So this was a dream job for him. He wants to be here. He's a more stable and unselfish person than McDaniels is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think we have to worry about him leaving anytime soon if it's not the right time to go. Because another thing with McDaniels was, what happens if Bill Belichick leaves New England in 2 or 3 years and Robert Kraft says, you know, come on back? He would leave in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. You know, he just seems like that kind of person to me. Yep. And so all the research we've done now on Frank Reich, everything just seems like it's going to be moving in the right direction now. And it got weird for a bit, but, you know, now we can move forward. And it at least looks like it's going to be a more stable future with less worry than it would have been with McDaniels.
Yeah, like I said before you answered the question, I feel like you guys came out on top. So if I'm a Colts fan, I'm actually happy with the way things went down, and the future looks brighter with Frank at the helm versus Josh. And I mean, I think the biggest thing really is you look at the Eagles offense last year, and they, you know, the Eagles offense that we saw week one through say week five was different than the one we saw, you know, week five to week 11. And that was different than the one we saw week 12 to 17. And then in the postseason, it was a little bit different too. Like, that just shows you how cerebral Frank Reich can be and how much he can adjust what he needs to do with his players based off of their skill set, their talents, and who they're playing against. And as a Bucs fan personally, like a lot of us were very frustrated last year with Dirk Koetter because it looked like that was a skill that Dirk Koetter lacked, was the ability to be flexible and adjust when needed to either his players or the opponent. And I think Frank Reich, I mean, yeah, he was one of my favorite coaching candidates. Like, you know, a lot of people think Dirk Koetter's on the hot seat this year, and he was kind of a guy that when it looked like the coaching carousel was coming to a stop, that he was still going to be on the outside looking in, sitting in an offensive coordinator position. I was like, 2019, that might be our guy if Dirk Koetter can't get it figured out. So, yeah, huge, huge steal in my opinion for the Colts. So, really, really pulling for you guys on that. I think you're going to enjoy what you get there. But moving into his first draft, right? I know the GM's the one makes the picks, but I'm sure these two have a good working relationship and are communicating. The foundation is set, right? Like I said, I think the Colts had a low-key successful offseason. I think the foundation is really starting to get there. But you can't live in a foundation, right? You got to build a house. What pieces do the Colts still need entering the draft to really get this thing back to where they were, what, 3-4 years ago?
Okay, so kind of the main topic with the Colts when it comes to team needs over the last several years, honestly, and unfortunately, has been the offensive line. But a big problem with the line, other than the lack of talent that it has, is that, you know, the coaching hasn't been able to adjust to that. Just like you were saying with Frank Reich being, you know, adaptable, and, you know, he schemes around the parts he has. He doesn't force parts into his scheme. You know, that's what the Colts have done forever. You know, if you have a terrible offensive line, you don't draw up pass routes that take forever to develop, and you don't send your quarterback on deep drops all the time. Frank Reich has already said that he's going to focus on getting the ball out of Luck's hands quickly. You know, that's going to mean, I'm sure there's always at least a couple options for quick passes for each play. There's just always going to be something. So the offensive line probably isn't going to be as critical as it used to be, because the coaching should on paper be able to overcome it. With that said, I do expect him to at least make a couple more moves. Because Chris Ballard's mantra is competition at every level. You know, everyone has to earn it. You don't want any of your starters being someone who kind of just won by default, you know, and is the lesser two evils. You want your starter to have earned it. So I would expect a couple more offensive linemen there. And then basically anything on defense, for the most part, other than maybe safety, would be considered a need, especially in the front seven. They need pass rushers badly. It's hyper critical to this defense that they be able to generate pressure with the front four. And they also only have, you know, a couple quality linebackers who would are rangy enough to be in this new 4-3 defense. So they definitely need linebackers. Could use at least a couple pieces that help rush the passer. And then the rest is stuff that maybe isn't super important. You know, they could use another running back who's capable of being an RB1 or RB2. And then they need at least one other receiver who has the capability of being a starter at some point.
Great. So, I mean, that's Colts in a nutshell, right? Like we said, they got a foundation, but they don't have all the pieces. So really a little bit of everything. But heading into the pick, I mean, from the way the first five picks have transpired, and I know there's been some surprises in there, but really, I mean, you really can't go wrong. Offensive line, Quentin Nelson is right there. I know you said it's not as big of an emphasis, and I think I agree with you on that, but he's still one of those guys that, you know, maybe he just catches the coach's eye that much and the GM's eye that much that they go ahead and pull the trigger anyway. Defense, like you said, they don't really need a whole lot of safety necessarily, but some secondary help is still out there. Guys like Denzel Ward, Mika Fitzpatrick. Pass rush. I mean, Bradley Chubb still sitting on the board, pretty much hands down the favorite pass rusher there in the draft, which is why a lot of people were surprised with the number four pick there being Harold Landry. So Landry's gone. He's not an option there. But we still got Saquon Barkley on the board. But how much confidence is there in Marlon Mack? You know, the coaching staff is a little bit different. The general manager is a little bit different. So what he laid down in his rookie year is not going to carry over as much as it might have beforehand. You know, and wide receiver, I mean, I think we would all probably agree number six is a little too high for guys like Calvin Ridley and those other top wide receivers, but, you know, still a need. So the list is on and on. And I mean, the shelves are full for the Indianapolis Colts to take exactly what they want off the shelf. So Jake Arthur, pick number six, who are the Colts going to take?
All right. At number six, to me, it's a no-brainer that NC State defensive end Bradley Chubb is the guy for the Colts. You know, it's just such a big need of theirs, and he's probably the best defensive player in the draft. So there's really no better way for them to go. There are a couple other options, you know, like you said, Quentin Nelson. It doesn't even matter if you need a guard. Quentin Nelson, someone that can start on any line. Roquan Smith has been getting a lot of buzz. I was okay with the Colts even looking at him at number three before they traded. I think he's one of the true blue chip guys in the draft. Then you've also got Minka Fitzpatrick, of course. Saquon was still on the board, Denzel Ward, and there's also even talk of Derwin James. So those are some of the kind of potentially elite level non-quarterbacks that are there. But to me, I think the easy choice is Bradley Chubb.
Yeah, I can't argue with you there. And I know we talked a little bit pre-recording. James and I have been talking about Bradley Chubb. Obviously, Bucks fans are enamored with him for good reason. But I've held firm in my belief that there's pretty much no way Bradley Chubb is making it to number seven. And if this progressive mock draft doesn't show why Bradley Chubb's not making it to number seven, then I don't know what else to say, because not only did we have four quarterbacks get taken before the Buccaneers selected, but we also had the Cleveland Browns not taking Bradley Chubb, not taking Saquon Barkley, not taking Quentin Nelson, but taking Harold Landry. So there's a player that was really by and large expected to get drafted after number seven, moving into the top seven, and still Bradley Chubb is not there, because you're 100% right, man. I mean, Quentin Nelson's a good talent, but he's not going to transform that offense this year. And I know that, you know, we're not looking at Super Bowl or bust for the Colts, right? But what you really want to do is provide that spark. And Bradley Chubb makes every level of the defense better. He makes your linebackers better. He makes your secondary better, because trust is a huge thing playing defense. And if you have a pass rusher that you trust is going to do their job, it makes your job behind him a lot easier to do. Quentin Nelson is not going to by himself make a running game better. He's not going to heal Andrew Luck. He's not going to get T.Y. Hilton more, you know, open. He's not going to make Ryan Grant, you know, a better receiver than the Ravens think he might be. Which, by the way, I agree with you. I think Ryan Grant is actually going to be much better than a lot of people expect him to be. And you know, and the same thing, Minka Fitzpatrick doesn't do anything for the pass rush. You know what I mean? So it makes sense on too many levels for this pick to not be Bradley Chubb. So yeah, 100% agree with you on that one. And I think the Colts are going to be happy with him. I think Colts fans are going to be happy with him.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's just very important that they be able to generate pressure from their defensive line. And I mean, Jabal Sheard can do it, but, you know, he was one of the most productive pass rushers from just a pressure standpoint last year, but I think he only had like 5 or 6 sacks. So it wasn't really fruitful. It's nice to be able to pressure the quarterback, but you have to be able to convert sacks. John Simon is another pass rusher, probably not to the level of Jabal Sheard, and he's probably going to be moving to the Sam linebacker, so he's not going to be a full-time pass rusher. And then Terrell Basham, who was picked in the third round last year, he actually could make some noise because he's going back to his home position of 4-3 defensive end rather than outside linebacker, which he had some growing pains last year. But still, I don't know if that's going to translate to him being a dominant pass rusher like the Colts need, because honestly, Basham looked he translated pretty well to someone like Jabal Sheard, who is more of an edge setter, well balanced edge guy. You know, not a pass rush specialist, but he could stop the run. They need someone whose specialty is getting to the quarterback, and I think although Bradley Chubb is an excellent run defender, and he's had a crazy amount of tackles for losses in the run game as well, he can get to the quarterback and get sacked. So I just think that is exactly what the Colts need. And teams don't let pass rushers like that go in free agency. So you almost have to take that opportunity when you get it in the draft, especially early. Because obviously the earlier it is, it's usually someone who's can't miss or they're pretty safe. And, you know, after guys like Chubb and Harold Landry, the rest of this edge rusher class gets really, really risky, and there's not a lot of sure things there. So I think you got to jump at the opportunity to get someone like Chubb when it's there for you.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I mean, you look at the Giants and Buccaneers, the trade they made this offseason. It took a little bit of age, a regime change in New York, and a fireworks accident to put Jason Pierre-Paul on the trading block. So, I mean, exactly. If that tells you right there how often – you know, good, solid defensive ends come available. There you go.
All right. Well, Jake, we certainly appreciate some of your time coming in, telling us about the Colts, making the pick for our progressive mock draft. Where can all the fine folks find you on the internet?
Well, I've got my home base there at stampedeblue.com. That's SB Nation's Indianapolis Colts website. You can also find me on Twitter at JakeArthurNFL, and you can find me on Facebook at the same address.
All right. Well, Jake, once again, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you here again in the coming weeks as we start to ramp up the NFL season, and we'll start getting into some of the fantasy football discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. Once my brain is no longer melted and I can put the pieces back together and focus on fantasy, we'll get that going.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Jake.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
You too. All right. That was Jake Arthur of Stampede Blue, and you can find him on Twitter at JakeArthurNFL. David, I think we have time for one quick Twitter question. I know people have been sending those in to you, and you know, we can't get to all of them on every episode as we're doing this progressive mock. We obviously have one more pick on Friday's episode, and then next week before the NFL draft kicks off, I think we're going to do a mailbag episode where people can just send in all their draft questions, and we will cover that for an entire show. So with the few minutes that we have remaining, I'll let you take your pick of which question you want to have addressed.
Yeah, so we got a lot of good questions. We really appreciate you guys sending those questions in. Continue to do so, please. Like James said, leading up to the draft, if we need to, we'll jump on, do a special just – you know, like I said, like he said, mailbag type episode and just answer all your guys' questions all in one shot. But, you know, we got questions from guys like Adam, Brian, Callum, you know, keep them coming. Obviously, Chef Aaron and all those guys are obviously repeat offenders. But we got a couple multi-tiered questions too. So I want to save those for the potential mailbag episode because many layers. I don't want to rush through them. So what we're going to answer today is more of a single level one, right? A defensive back focus question, right? So Brian, who on Twitter is at Greco Suave, great name. He wrote an opinion